Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman with another woodland escape.
Welcome back once again to Cabin Country. I'm Fudd.
And I'm Bjorn.
New year here, a new year of podcasting for us. We're on year number four.
Yes. Got some staying power here in the
podcast community,
which is
determination.
Good to know.
Leads to
grit.
Keep going forward, finding new
grist
people. Yeah. Grit and grist? Yeah. A little of that, too.
Some buckwheat flakes, yes.
Unusual recording session today because we're meeting on a Saturday afternoon.
Correct.
Here in February. And we were heading up somewhere.
We were. You know, Fudd, we were going to be the guests of our dear friend, Bassmaster Pike Slayer Greg. Greg G. I'm not sure how public he wants his name to become at this point, but he's a proud renter slash owner of kind of a Taj McShack fish house on the east side of Mille Lacs. And we were all set today, Fudd, to get up there and kind of multimedia blitz on
had
this
the
thing.
Cameras
we
gonna, packed.
We had the cameras. We had the drone cameras. Yes, the video. And of course, our trusty Zoom audio digital equipment.
Oh, yes.
We were ready to just sit down and talk about the life, the lifestyle, and the high points and low points of winter life on the weekends in a fishing shack on Mille Lacs with a flat-screen TV, artichoke dip, and the heat set at 70.
Hardcore. Wow.
My dad would have...
That's not ice fishing. That's what he called it.
That's sitting in your house. Well, yeah. And maybe we would have liked sitting in our house, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Heating our hands on the exhaust of the car and
right.
sitting in a 5-gallon upturned bucket.
But yes.
No, Fudd, last night we found that sure enough there were wind warnings here in the Oakdale studio and in the St. Paul glow of the number one. And you get a lake the scale of Mille Lacs, wide open, flat, and 50 to 60 mile an hour winds blowing.
Right. That's.
We had our gear, we had our coffee, we were headed north, and we got the phone call right outside of Rush City. Hey, you're going to probably, unless you've got all day into tomorrow, we might have to wait until next year, because I guess the houses were in motion, as
right.
talking heads would say. You know, the a couple of fish houses moved a little bit, the wind was just blowing crazy, and... yeah, Walleye Slayer Greg said I couldn't see 30 feet in front of my vehicle and actually got stuck.
Wow.
And needed an assist getting back off the lake. The ice road was blown over. They were going to need to come out with the plows. And I got the feeling it sounded like there was some rearranging of fish houses that needed to happen too. I'm not sure, but... you know, he was like, well, if you can come out about 7 tonight. And we were like, you know.
We didn't really plan on that.
Yeah, that wasn't not a full days. But we already got it on the calendar for next year.
Ideally,
yeah, we'll try it again. I, you know, would have loved to have done a cabin country from the fish house on Mille Lacs.
Yeah.
Garrison, Mille Lacs Parkway area. But he said in two weeks time, yeah, they'll be pulling the houses off.
Because,
yeah. Even tomorrow, Fudd. I know. It's being rumored that there's a snowfall coming on Monday, Tuesday. But even tomorrow, it's supposed to be 40 degrees.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's Minnesota. It was right. Like -4 when we took off.
Right.
And tomorrow might be hitting 40,
40
above zero.
Yeah, just crazy. So,
and that's Fahrenheit for any of you. yeah.
Anybody in Europe, Asia, Australia? Yeah, we've got apparently some listenership in Tierra del Fuego, South America.
Yeah, isn't that something?
But yeah, we're dealing with Fahrenheit here, folks.
Right.
That's a pretty wide swing of temperatures. So if the ice is getting it all thin, and I know it's safe. Yeah. Driving on any of the Minnesota lakes, January, February, but it's already late February.
Yeah.
And all I can think is, you know, I've only had this car for like 7 years. And really, right. Should be ashamed to add it to the structure of Lake Mille Lacs.
Lose it.
Yeah. There it goes. Deep six. Wow. Goodbye, Honda. Yeah, that would be bad. But
so we turned it around.
We turned around, Fudd. We did.
Headed back here to the Oakdale Studios.
Came back to the studio and thought, well, let's give a little update. And Greg, sorry, we gave it our college try here. And next year we'll get out there, I promise. It'll happen.
Rightio.
Maybe more like January instead of February. It's hard to say.
Yeah. But, a little earlier try.
Yeah. Yeah. When we'll it seems see. Like the calendar's free up, the ice is starting to free up too, sadly enough. So.
Yeah.
But hopefully, yeah, next year we'll come to you live from the frozen surfaces of Mille Lacs Lake and the 70-degree temperatures.
Right.
And, you
on
know.
On top of 18 inches of ice.
Absolutely.
Or whatever it is.
Absolutely. And I'll bring another artichoke dip.
Oh, that's beef jerky.
Beef jerky and plantain
chips. I had a
power
bar in my pocket.
Yeah, oh, all good. All good. We were ready to go.
Long johns and everything, just in case.
You know what? Nature sometimes changes your mind for you.
So. Yes, well, that's...
There you are.
We're used to that here.
We are.
The Midwest.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But we are excited to introduce a segment I think we recorded last summer.
Right.
August, I think, sometime.
Yes.
And
yes.
We visited with my Uncle Joe, who's my cousin Doug's dad.
Absolutely.
They're the long owners of the shack since around 59, 1960.
Right, right.
Uncle Joe was an engineer. Can't remember when he said he started. I think it was the late 40s, early 50s. Maybe.
Yeah, I think he was talking about his time 16, as a stoker, a fireman.
Yeah, sir. I was a
late 40s, maybe
coal shoveler.
Yeah, yeah.
But we got to learn all kinds of things. As you find out that there's just as much interesting lingo,
yes.
In railroad jargon as
right,
there is from
right.
maritime
now
you know, sailing. And
now I know what a bakehead.
Like, yeah,
you know, I mean, but
yeah.
Someone involved with the youth movement, I'm like, that might have some sort of negative connotations. No, it means he's one half of his face is facing the firebox, and then Stoker's got the other side.
Yes,
he's got kind of a sunburn on one half of their face. Bakeheads, you know. And, oh, that's what you mean. Okay,
but of course, you've heard us go on enough about trains and our love for the horn that echoes down the Gull River.
You bet.
Whenever we're up there, it's one of our favorite things. And, of course, our friend Ed.
Right.
Ed Brewster. He also is a lover
sensitive
of...
Sensitive fellow.
You're so tight!
Yes, indeed.
So we were overdue with getting my uncle to share, you know, his experiences.
Right.
46 years, I think, on the in the railroad. And
romanticism of flying in a
yes
in a cab down
right.
the rails in
right.
the greater Minnesota at about 2 a.m, you know,
yes,
or 10 p.m. or whatever, you know,
right,
sundown. It just all sounds like out there and hit the horn just because you can.
Did a run to like Seattle and back,
right,
I think,
right,
many
yeah.
times. But
part of a Deadhead crew, yet another term.
Yeah, you know, another like, term, Deadhead.
So lots of Grateful Dead fans are showing up. And
right.
Bakeheads, in other words.
Deadheads.
Yeah, Bakeheads and Deadheads.
Right.
It's one,
right.
one and the same. No, actually, yeah, Deadheading, getting yourself out there is kind of like...
moving crews
moving
where they're
crews
needed.
From place to place.
Like
get us
yeah.
out there to help bring a train back from the West Coast. And,
we had to tick the explicit language box for this episode.
We did.
Because...
we did.
You know, one of the endearing qualities of my uncle is that...
colorful.
Yeah, he's colorful. Yeah.
That's right.
Great, but a great storyteller and a little salt in weaved into
adds
those
flavor,
stories.
Right.
Adds flavor.
Adds flavor to the tales,
flavorful,
without a doubt.
So, and maybe sometime we'll get my cousin Doug to do some additional color commentary.
Reminiscence, yes, yes.
On his dad, on the shack, and well, actually, you know, we've heard a bit of Doug from the Bass Classic a couple of years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last year was the 40th. This year will be the 41st. Maybe we'll run into the guys again this year, this summer.
Horn in on the early hours of the get there just in time for the toasting of to the fire, the fish, and anything that you can raise a glass to. So,
and then back to our cabin.
And back to the shack.
Bjorn and I will sleep in while those guys...
A postum. And,
quietly sneaking away from the dock at 4:35 a.m.
Go have an Oastie.
Oastie.
Caffeine-free white acorn beverage. White oak acorn.
Well, anyway, let's go
back to Joe.
Back to that recording. Yeah. And
he's not moving mighty slow. In fact, we'd like to hear what he's got to say to us here about the crazy days of steam and diesel.
There is something about a train going by that has a strong appeal. Just about everybody likes to watch trains roar by and travel with them in imagination.
I think this is true. I'm the oldest living qualified steam locomotive engineer in Minnesota.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
There was a guy in Duluth, Jack Wolf. He made the claim. Now, he died last Christmas. Okay. I can make the claim.
Wow.
Well, that's sorry, Jack.
Wow.
You get examined when you're promoted from fireman engineer. You have to make the test, and it's a week-long thing.
Okay.
So we had to do the steam. Our class had to do 10 guys through the steam, and the next week we had to do diesel.
Okay.
That was the last class of steam. There were no more. Hmm. There are no more steamers.
So when did you start as an engineer? Like, what, remember the year maybe you were in?
1960, full-time, right there somewhere.
Were you engineering?
No, I was a fireman at that time.
Fireman, so you were loading coal in the...
Shoveling coal, yeah.
Well, that must have been hard work. What was that like?
It didn't seem that bad. You're young, you know, you don't know any better. And
you just do it? And
yeah.
Well, look at the guy.
Well.
He's an ox. I mean, he could...
A strong guy.
Must have gotten hot in there in the summer months when you're shoveling.
Yeah, really hot. And it was cold as hell in the winter.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
They used to call engineers bakeheads, because when you're fireman, you bake this side, you go over engineer, and you bake this side, so you're a bakehead when you're engineer.
Bakehead, wow. Oh, my gosh.
In wintertime... It could be terrible. If you had a stoker, they'd be freezing up. And just problems. Coal crushers, they had to get broken down to a certain, like ice cubes.
Mm-hmm.
And if that didn't work right, you wind up hand firing, hand bombing, they called it.
That was
a job. You couldn't keep up. If you had an asshole engineer, you couldn't. He took more out of it, you could put in. And I remember occasion when I was sure I quit. I worked between Dilworth and Jamestown, and... We were late, 16 hours. We had a shitty train. It took long to get over the road, and that's the way it was. And we made it to Jamestown just in 16. Before we did, we ran out of coal. And in the wintertime, if it was moist, the coal would hang up in the tender. And there was a device called a coal pusher, just a big bar with a steam piston. And they seldom worked. And you'd turn it on, fill the piston full of steam, and just give a slow push and back, and that'd tumble the coal down. That's the idea. Well, it was froze up, so it wasn't working. So I had to pick the coal. So I go back, I take a lantern, bent the handle over. You know, the old railroad lantern with the loop like this here?
Yeah.
I bend it over good. I run up quick. I take a jump, and I make the top. Stoker's going. And I make the top, I grab the side of the tender, the coal box, and I hang the lantern on there, and I'm one-handed trying to pick, get some coal down. Now, the engineer and the brakeman, he don't help me worth a shit. He could have, but he plain didn't give a damn. Yeah. And when you go up there, there's a canvas separator between the tender and the locomotive. And... So whatever I did, I jarred the lantern loose, and it fell down on the worm, and that was the end of the lantern. Now it's dark. Now it's black. I can't see nothing. I threw the pick away, threw that out over the side. I thought, I got to let go because my hands are going to freeze. You know, it was colder than hell. I can't hang on here anymore, and I can't get out because there's no place to get out. There's nowhere to go. So I thought, down. It signs like that. Now, if I take a couple steps down, I can put a foot here and a foot here, and I got one on each side, so I'm not touching that worm.
Yeah.
It's honking the coal into the... And it worked. Then I got it, pulled the curtain back, and they're both... not. They don't have no idea. And I was just pissed off. Like, you sons of bitches.
Yeah.
I could have went through that, lost a leg in that worm, and you wouldn't even know it.
Jeez.
So that really bugged me. So I got to Jamestown. I told the engineer, I said, I quit. I'm not going to have a job like this. And I told him off, too. I said, you can stick this job in your ass. I'm dead end. I'm number two. This is no job for anybody. And he said, yeah, I'm sorry. We should have left the curtain open so we could see what's going on, or held a light for you or something. He said, I'm sorry about that. I said, that's okay. I'm going home on number two. So I slept whatever it took, 8 hours or something like that. And then I was going to catch number two back, deadhead back to St. Paul, and that's the end of that. And then he says, no, let's go back to Dilworth. Let's just take the trip back with me to Dilworth, and then if you want to quit, go ahead and quit. And I'm, well, okay. So that'd be one last trip back, and I'm done.
Right.
So we walked from the coal dock up to the depot, and I wonder, what the hell? Because you always got your locomotive in the roundhouse by the coal dock.
Mm-hmm.
Train came in, they cut off, you went on, coupled up, tried the air, and go. And we're not going, we walked to the depot. He's, you'll see. And down the line comes a headlight and a diesel. It was the first freight diesel experimental done on the NP. And that was our train back to Dilworth.
Wow.
Holy shit. You know, it's all clean and nice and neat. Your heat, turn the heater on, blows like a dam. They had heaters knock your hat on.
Yeah.
So you turn up nice and warm and roasty, you could be a T-shirt that... I thought, well, you know, this may not be so bad. This is the future here.
Timing, yeah.
Wow.
So that was my introduction to diesels. I had never, we didn't have them. That was out of LaGrange. They put them out on the line and let the railroads try them, see how efficient they were, you know, pulling trains. So it didn't stay. It went away until we bought some. But that was the future. And this might be okay.
Then how long until you got to use one of those new diesels or work in one?
Oh, then it wasn't, we didn't have freight to quite a long time. But we had passenger diesels, though. They were dieselized in late 40s.
Okay.
The last of the steamers went in about 58 or 9. That was the end of the steamers. And I worked one, a T-class engine out of Little Falls, one of the last jobs they pulled with the steamer. And that was just a fun job, a little light trains and not much work. And I would just kind of wave at the girls and blow the horn and whistle.
Yeah.
So then it was all diesel from there. They converted and diesels got bigger and stronger and better. But they usually always had a good heater.
Oh, okay.
20 below zero, turn that sucker up and you're going to be okay.
They weren't air conditioned too, were they?
They weren't there now.
Yeah.
They were not then.
Yeah.
So open the windows and...
hang your head out a little bit and watch out. Watch out for what might be coming. Yeah.
So all right, 1960s, when you discovered that lot on the Gull, what was the run you were usually doing then?
Three and four, my buddy Skip. I was the engineer. He was the fireman. It was a passenger train. It had all the layover in Staples. You're home like for 12, and then you're gone all night, all day, and then back the next night.
Okay.
But it paid good. So Skip and I went, we worked that job, and we stayed down the shack.
Oh, okay.
So it worked out. We had a telephone down there, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And they could call us, let us know. Yeah, four's on time, so we'd drive back. And
to Staples, which is how far from?
I think 32 miles west of the shack.
Okay.
Wow. I feel like we always see that sign for Staples, Motley.
Yeah, Motley's between the two.
Yeah, right, okay. You know, all this railroad lingo you're using, it's almost like maritime sailing stuff. Like, what is deadhead? You're going to have to school me on how, what does deadhead mean?
If they need crews elsewhere, say I'm in Northtown.
Okay.
And there are a lot of eastbound trains, a bunch left of Seattle at the same time.
Okay.
So they're spread out some, but there's still more eastbound trains coming than there are crews. So the crews are all down Northtown. They might deadhead one, two, three, or four crews. They deadhead you up there on a train usually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And recently they use cabs and cars and whatever the hell.
So you're moving crews from one place to another to pick
up
the job.
You get deadhead pay for doing it.
So the firehouse, compared to the engineer room? I mean, that's two different spaces, or I always thought that the fire coal box or whatever was right in the same car as the engine, or
the fire door, for the throw the coal in the
right.
boiler.
Yeah,
that's in the middle, and the engineer's over here, and the fireman and the brakeman are here, and here's the fire door there.
Okay,
that's an air operated thing. You get a good load if you're good at it. You can maybe pick up 15 pounds of coal with a number 12 scoop.
Yeah,
and you're coming. Sometimes you got to throw it 18 feet.
Oh.
But there's an iron ring around the bottom of the door.
Oh,
so you hit the ring just right, and the coal goes beautiful, and it was slick. You can't leave the door open and all the cold air going in and wreck what you're trying to do.
Okay.
So when you start swinging, you put your toe, your foot, forward part of your foot, you pivot, hit that, it's the air door, bang, it opens up, butterfly.
Oh,
like that.
Yep. Yeah.
You hit the ring, and away you go, and everything's smooth as glass. If you miss the ring, you're coming. You hit the back of a shut door. Coal's all over hell. And you got a crabby engineer. He'll tell you, he got coal over there. You go and get that coal off where his station is.
Yeah.
And everybody missed the ring. Maybe the train was going like this.
Yeah.
You go and move it, and whoop, it goes, well, there's coal all over it.
Yeah.
Well, what does the engineer do besides yell at the fireman?
He pulls the throttle, and he adjusts the speed and the timing of the engine. And
okay, so
knows when to hit the brake. Well, that'd be the brakeman.
Yeah, he does
the brakeman.
Yeah.
The brakes are complicated on the railroad. They're not just set and release. It's a complicated procedure. If you're going to do something with a heavy train, you're going to go into Becker with a full train. And you better damn well be at it 2 miles ahead of time.
Right.
You're going to be in trouble. So you have to think way ahead of how you're going to do this and which way, and use air, electrics, and you really have to think ahead.
When did they, I'm going to guess, it's a long, long ago, but I'm being in Brainerd and looking at some of the stuff they had at Pioneer Village or whatever. They talk about the old days with the brake. There were brakemen climbing the cars.
Yeah, they did. Hand brakes.
That had to be long gone by the time you were.
No, that was.
They were still doing that.
Well, they still. They're still equipped with it for a car that's on spot. They can go up and spot it and then break it down. But on the go, it used to be they pull cars up, pull pins.
Yeah.
You know, the guy give you a kick, give a shove, you pull the pin, and that'll do, and stop, and the car went by itself. And went to 5 or 9 or where the hell. They'd throw switches, and that's what they call shaking them out. When you got a drag to do that with. And in that case, there was guys who rode those cars with that stem winder.
Yep.
And that would slow them up before they hit.
Okay, so you're kind of applying brakes as you're coming in.
Yeah, but that's not me. That's the brakeman or switchman.
Okay.
That's to slow those cars down before it makes impact.
Right.
And that's the reason for
that kind of big T-bar they'd be carrying?
Yeah, they carry a brake club,
an
oak brake club, to get leverage on the thing.
Sure.
And but they quit. Too many people got hurt doing that, so now they do not do that anymore. They'll set a brake on a stopped car only.
Hmm. Well, to show my naivete here, I mean, even the beautiful new top flight diesels and everything, they've still got sandboxes and stuff on the front to drop
do,
sand
yeah.
so they can get traction in the whole bit. And I think steam trains and kind of Wild West and those big stacks and water towers and everything. And
one of those domes on a steam engine is the sand.
Yeah. And I just remember as a kid, I was like, why would you need sand on a train?
Yeah.
My dad was like, think about it. You get that steel on steel, and if there's any frost or
you've probably
wet
somewhere I've heard trains starting out, a steam engine, they might be going,
yeah, they start that kind of slide.
Yeah, that's what the sand goes on. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, how many in a crew then in those days?
We had 5 back then.
5. Okay.
Fireman, engineer, head man, behind man, and conductor.
Okay.
Now they have 2.
Wow.
I suppose everything's so automatic that it's just you don't need as many.
Well, now they have detectors that could pick up a lot of problems. It used to be they had bad bearings. They had no brass lead-plated friction bearing. And they didn't last long. They just couldn't, well maintained and oiled, and they still didn't last long. Now it's Timken and Hyatt. They make roller bearings, and they go forever, and they don't get hot, and they just. But they have detectors now every 20 miles, all the way to Seattle. And they'll pick up temperatures. You can go 90 miles an hour. And that their infrared, or I don't know what, they have little devices that measure the temperature, ding, 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 every axle, even going 90. If you got a hot one back, quarter ways back, they'll tell you, so-and-so east, extra east, you have a hot indication, 30-second axle right side. So you got to stop, and the head man goes back. He has color cranes. And he gives it a swipe. If it's a Hyatt, use this color crane. If it's Timken, use that. If it melts, it's too hot, set it out. It can't run. If it doesn't melt, it's hot, keep on going. That's the technology. Wow. Color cranes. Wow. That's no ship. That's wow.
And that would take a long time. They tell you, all right, we got a hot one, hot axle.
Yeah.
You got to stop. And that takes, I mean, how long does it take to come to a stop if you're going?
Well, yeah, a mile and a half, maybe. Okay. Maybe a mile if you're really going.
You know, where I live now, we get the train right in our backyard. What's the squealing you were talking about? Noise with the bearings? Would that be the bearings?
No, that's just, it's the flange will hit the rail. They're both kind of shiny, been used a lot, just came from Seattle. It's all shiny steel. The rail has been used 10 times a day. That's shiny steel. So when the flange, you know, there's a flat part of a rail, and then the flange goes like that, uh-huh. Keep you on the track. When the flange hits the rail, if they're both shiny and polished, it'll give that screechy noise.
Oh, okay.
And it's annoying, but that's just...
Well, you know, we don't know nothing about it, but to hear that, you think, oh, now there's been trains with engines in the middle.
Yeah.
Because he's gotten there 120, 140, I mean, yeah. Just really, really long. And then they slow down, and when you hear the thump, 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 is that when they're leaving, speeding up, or is that when they're slowing down? You know what I mean by that, when you hear the couples all the way along the train?
Yeah, that's just the slack action going. And I, the middle, engine's in the middle. I can't tell you how in the hell they do that. I don't know.
Wow.
I did have engine on the hind end, and that did not work well.
Oh, really?
Oh, there's always been...
front and back.
Back, but I mean now, just lately, it seems the
Dale
last...
told me that there was at a crossing there on the Gulf River. Mm-hmm. They were stopped for 2 hours, and that was a case of a hot box, and it dropped the axle. It got so hot, axle dropped down. Didn't derail, but, you know, you can't move shit.
Oh, yeah.
And that train was 2.25 miles long.
Oh, my God. Oy.
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh. Wow.
I think 12,000 feet. They had everything all tied up.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, they had our crossing, which wouldn't make a shit.
Yeah.
Then the next crossing was tied up, too.
Oh, my gosh.
It goes down to Dale's, Little Pine Resort.
Little Pine Resort, yeah.
Okay.
That road now is way down. They moved it. Well, that was blocked, too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so 2.25 miles. And that was a case of three engines. Head, middle, and hind end.
I have never seen a train with a middle engine.
We never did. You know, we've been there 7 years now, and it's this year is the first time we've seen that.
Yeah.
And it's quite frequent.
They're going to make it work. You know, if they can run 2-mile-long trains and do it safely, they'll make it.
They don't go very fast, but there are times when it picks up speed a little bit, but sometimes they just crawl.
I went up last weekend, and there was one, a westbound with three-unit situation. And we didn't have any way of measuring the train. I was with Dale Wright. But it was a 2-miler.
Wow.
In three power situations. And they were going 65.
Holy crap.
So we could do that. We could time them and all that.
Wow. So, Dad, you told a story once where you spent the day riding along with Joe.
Well, it wasn't the day. It was when I first was getting into the family. I said, I've never been on a train, and I always like trains. So you said, "Oh, take you some morning." Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So I got. Geez, it was early. God, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
I can't remember where'd we go. What was
it? It just went up 10, I guess. I don't know. Up.
Yeah.
It was a short run.
Yeah. Okay.
But I sat in the engine with you, and it was fun. I mean, I never did that before, so.
I think we've all heard stories from, you know, when you're on trains, the hair-raising stories maybe, or things that animals on the road, or
surprises
or scary moments when you're an engineer, like, oh, there's nothing I can do, and
you never forget. And I, to this day, I don't. When you hit people or cars, you have such a strong memory there. It comes out of nowhere, bang! You count to one, and it's there.
Wow.
So yeah. That's really bullshit.
Yeah.
I've been involved in 7 fatalities. And it just I got shivers now thinking about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And one of the worst was at Anoka at the asylum. There's an insane asylum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. At First Crossing going west at the depot.
Yep.
And when it come here, I hit cars there too, 2 or 3 times. But I come around there and there's a lady right in the middle of the tracks looking at us. And we're going 80. I'm with Phil Costello. And no way in hell, you know, just get on the horn, da da da. And she blessed herself, and she turned her back on us like that, and whacko, we got her.
Oh, my gosh.
We're going 80. And see, I got goosebumps.
Oh. Yeah. Well, didn't mean to bring up those bad memories.
No, that's part of it. I can tell you a good one on the same crossing.
Yeah?
It has gates. Mm-hmm. It dropped down in both directions.
Yeah.
And with Ron Risty, we come around the corner, same situation, and we got a freight, though. So we're only going 65. And Ron says, oh, she's going to go around through the gates. There was a gal with a, I don't remember the car, new model, GM something. And she went around the gates, and she's going to go across. I'm still going 64 when we hit her, maybe. Right. And bang, you don't feel it. You don't even spill your coffee on the engine. Just you hear a little bang, that's it.
Yeah.
So I didn't even see it. We stopped. The highway cops come out. First time I ever got a pinch on it. Not pinched. They wanted to know about it. They took information.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right. We were carrying a license by that time. But anyway, then the hind guy told us later, we got to Staples, and he told me, this lady had a foot through the, first of all, it took off both fenders, the motor, right to the firewall. And there's a hole in the firewall, and she had a foot sticking on the firewall, and she didn't have a scratch on her.
Wow. Really?
It spun around, took a big hunk of the back bumper, but the front end was severed off.
Wow.
And somehow her foot wound up through the hole, and she didn't have a scratch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
My goodness.
Man, wow. I thought, oh, boy, this is a bad one.
Oh, yeah.
You hear that, though, in driver's training. It's a train that will take at least 2 miles to stop.
Yeah.
So don't be playing games with those gates.
There's no way you can do. You can't hardly react.
No, it's not fair to the crew on that train that you're putting them through that rubbish. But we all know a story or two. Did you ever have, moose or cows or anything walk out?
Yeah, lots of times, yeah.
Yeah?
Horses, cows,
I was talking, moose is the biggest member of the deer family, but I don't think they're going to do real well against
an 80-mile. I never hit a moose. I had a moose run ahead of me.
Okay.
Out of Dilworth up the Buffalo River, and there was a moose. I blew the shit out of the horn. And I thought, oh, we're going to get them, because moose are slow, kind of. They look slow. They're so big.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, shit. So I pulled on all the lights. Give the moose a chance.
Right.
Because that could blind them. With deer, if you do that, sometimes you're going, you're going to hit some. They're up there. Pull all the lights down.
Down,
and then wait, and you don't hear any dinging. They got out of the way. They could see you, and they got out of the way.
Yeah.
Need all them lights and headlights on and shit. They just look at it.
Froze, yeah.
Right.
That's my theory.
Up. Yep, you're in the headlights.
So I pulled the lights down, and where we should have hit the moose, there was nothing. So he stepped off.
Hmm.
So that's a nothing story there.
That's good. Nothing can be good.
Moose in the headlights now.
Bullwinkle is grinning somewhere.
Do you, I mean, this could be my imagination. This is about train whistles. I've been going up since the early 70s, and that train, I think it was Burlington Northern at that time. The whistles always sounded the same, kind of a long, but they kind of changed about 20 years ago. Do you have any knowledge of that or knowledge about whistles and how they work?
Electronic.
Oh, electronic?
Yeah, okay. There used to be all air.
Okay.
It used to be steam in the steam locomotive days.
Okay.
Then diesels came. It was air horns. Then it's electronic, and I don't know how that works. I've never had a problem with one, or I don't know how they help.
Well, even the crossings now, like, say, in Royalton, you know, it's an electronic dinging sound. It's not even a bell. It's an electronic bell, right?
The old steam engines, you could make them talk, you know, different. You could make them kind of low growly.
Yeah.
Or you could just hit them, and they'd be shrill.
Okay.
Some had three stacks on. They're in harmony. So you can blow
it.
Oh, fun.
There was even a quick, abrupt, short, and an elongated long with fades off. Now, that's an F-U.
Okay.
They can communicate them to a point. You know, if you're trying to annoy somebody or piss off a guy, you see you're going by,
Give him that blast.
It's a little love note, as you know.
We're going to take a short break here, but don't go away. We've got more with my Uncle Joe right after this. This is a test of the Cabin Country broadcast system. The broadcasters of your area, in voluntary cooperation with the fishing, hunting, and cabin construction authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an outdoors emergency. If this had been an actual emergency, an early start to the smelt run on the Knife River, record numbers of pheasant flushes near French Lake, or a sale on the triple glazed windows and pine paneling at Cross Lake Lumber, the attention signal you just heard would have been followed by official information, news, or instructions. This station, WCCN, serves the greater Cabin Country area. This concludes the test of the Cabin Country broadcast system.
I sure do love keeping up with the Cabin Country episodes on the Gas Station Podcast Network. And it's available at most of my favorite fuel stops, Fudd.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to enjoy a brief woodland escape while tending your vehicle's necessities. But let me ask you, Bjorn, you ever find yourself spending so much time on the highways and byways that you haven't taken care of your own necessities?
What are you driving at, Fudd?
Well, I don't think I'm overstepping my bounds when I say that hours on the road flying through the fields and forests sometimes leave all of us feeling just a bit irregular.
Ah, yes.
And the good news is that FiberStop fuel stations are still there for all of us.
FiberStop?
Yes, FiberStop, the fuel station that offers the many grades of fuel your vehicle might need, including all the various octane ratings, flex fuel, diesel, and even Rec 90 gasoline for your recreational vehicles and boats. But the real kicker here, Bjorn, is that FiberStop also offers a full range of high-fiber snacks, as well as gastrointestinal medications for the traveler that is feeling that road-weary, logy feeling. Stomach upset? Indigestion? Constipation or the opposite? No problem. FiberStop has you covered.
And I understand that FiberStop has an amazing selection of high-fiber muffins, scones, and bars in their bakery case.
Baked fresh every morning, Bjorn. And they feature the Gas Station Podcast Network at the pumps as well, alongside the full range of fresh and ready Mitts coffee flavors at their coffee bar.
Sounds too good to be true, Fudd.
No, but it's true, Bjorn. FiberStop keeps you going.
I worked on the Korean Railroad, too, for 2 years, a year and a half.
The Korean Railroad?
Yeah, in 51, 2, and 3.
Okay.
From summer of 51, all of 52, and I come in March 53.
Is that with the Army?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Korean War?
That was my job. My MOS, military occupation something, was locomotive engineer.
So did you feel lucky then, being driving a train in Korea and not having to, like, go to combat?
Or marked, like, this is a target, you know?
Oh, yeah. What was it like in the war?
Well, the only time I got buzzed was the U.S. Navy. And they liked doing that. And why the hell they did, but they did.
Really? Sure. They'd bomb the train at you?
They weren't bombing us, no. Oh. But they sure buzzed the shit out of you. You'd get your attention.
Oh, wow. Huh.
There was a Marine Corps company at the end, at the harbor of Kunsong. We ran from Taejon to Kunsong. When the 24th Division came back in, they got their kicked ass, first of all. Run down the Pusan perimeter. You may have heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
Then they shoved back, went north. It was MacArthur was running the show then. And they made a fast advance to Seoul. They met there at a place called Yeongdeungpo. And the 1st Marines had come in at Incheon, and they met. They left behind there 25,000 troops, North Koreans. They just left them. They had the war up here, and they left them. We had a damn railroad track that went through that. And nobody wanted that one.
I bet.
But that we ran through that. In reality, what those guys wanted was food and women.
Yeah, okay.
So we leave the boxcar. If they had boxcars, either leave them at West Taejon or else open the doors so they could see there was nothing in there.
Right. Oh, okay.
It was loads, and leave it at West Taejon. On those trains, we had a gondola, a cinder car, they call it, just full of shit. Then the second car had two stations on it with machine guns. And you start out with what they call national police. You had 8 or 10 of them. Not military, MP, national police. That was young Koreans, that too young for the war.
Okay.
They gave them an armband, national police. They were in them. And they were the guards. It was such a joke. Usually you leave in West Chase and they'd bail off. They'd talk it over and know where they're going. And nothing, no part of that. So you might want to have one or two out of the whole crew. And then they gave you two 50s bolted together, welded.
Yeah.
No, it was a twin 50.
Yep.
And you got one in that corner, one in that corner. Some is one, but you're often two. And you think, I'm taking on the world with these two damn machine guns. I don't know shit.
And driving the train at the same time.
No, I wasn't there. I was a train rider, a conductor.
Okay.
I carried right.
So you got to be the gunner.
Got cars out of here. Yeah. They had a Korean engineer and a Korean fireman. Two firemen.
Let me punch your ticket, and then I got to get back on the Twin 50s and light up that division out there in the field.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
But nothing ever bad happened to me on that line. There was a guy killed there, but... Huh. Machine gunned.
Hmm. God, I feel like every piece of war footage I've seen from Korea, it's Sky Raiders or something hitting a train, blowing up trains, blowing up tracks. And like, whoo, that sounds like a dangerous job to me.
I saw a MiG, two MiGs, but they wanted to get the hell out.
Okay.
Because in no time there was Sabre liners right in the same area.
Sure.
So when I saw them, MiGs had real fat wings, deep. Yep. The Sabre liner was skinnier. So F-86 Sabre.
Yeah.
And then that got my attention, but nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad.
Yeah. So they just flew right over you and off they went because they were maybe getting chased by the
quite a ways too.
U.S. Air Force. Yeah.
Yeah, to the rescue, the F-86. We had all kinds of trains, every sort of train you could imagine. A typical thing, the inbound people came in at Incheon, replacements, always they landed there. There was a big depot there where they, you're going here and you're going here and all that. And it was Marines. They did it different because all the Army guys, artillery, infantry, whatever, they went in old coaches. They did. The windows were gone. There was no windows in them, but they had a bench to sit on. Right. And it was an old past-year coach.
Yep.
So they're out of the weather, but except the windows were all gone. And the Marines, they put them in boxcars. We're tough.
That's right.
These young guys, they got brand new uniforms. They're all green and crinkly. Just come out of the case. And they get to work. And you take them pretty close. At Munsam North, we could take them up at nighttime. We're beyond tank and beyond artillery. So we take POL trains, petroleum oil and lubricants, up there for tanks because they burn fuel like hell and there was no... In the wintertime, there's no roads. They couldn't get fuel to tanks because the roads weren't blacktop there. Anyway, and them Marines would be getting off them boxcars, young guys, and they'd say, give me some more. They put bandoliers, the M1 ammo. The bandolier, I think, has 7 clips or I don't know. And they'd be putting 3 or 4, and they're heavy. Oh, kid, don't do that. And low enough, and away they go. 3 days later, we'd have a hospital train up there. Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
And the hospital trains always had a refrigerated car in the back end for the dead guys. Bodies.
Yeah, yeah.
They flew them in helicopters. They put them on trains. Oof. But that would be, I really felt bad for those Marines. The way they were a head job on. They were the best in the world. They're going to kick ass. I'm going to kill them commies.
Get in the boxcar.
Now, when you built the shack in 1960 or 59 or whatever, were there restrictive rules as to how big you could build? And I mean, I know the story.
They really didn't much care.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
Okay.
Want to build or whatever.
Hmm. I thought that you could only have like hunting shack type things. You couldn't build.
No, you couldn't have tar paper. You couldn't have a mobile trailer and you couldn't have tar paper. Remember, Bill?
Yeah.
Oh.
So there was minor restrictions. But then when they went to a large, though, that two doors down, draw from the next guy, Andy Peterson or something, he wanted to extend his. And they say, you can go 1/3 of your size more. And he did that. But then he also put a little cement patio. And they made him tear it out.
Oh.
He went to 1/3 plus the cement, and they counted that.
Yeah.
You know, Doug has the bill of sale. We bought the wood in Aldridge, and I think it was $175, lumber bill.
Okay, yeah. For building the shack.
And that would be dated. Carol was happy, and we'd be off on deck hunting one a year, you know, if we take 2 weeks or whatever the hell. And so she'd get rid of the whole crew, and she enjoyed that.
Some peace and quiet.
Yeah, every time of year.
Wow.
I think she was up there maybe twice in 40 years.
Yeah. Really? You know, and Doug, just what, 2 years ago, last year, I don't know, he fixed it up now. It's looking like a modern, it looks like a beautiful sauna on the inside or something, you know?
Yeah. Girls won't put up with an outdoor shitter. They,
oh, yeah. Right. First he did that. First he made he built a shower on 2x12 floor joists. So that thing is where they'll go if a tornado comes, I think.
Right, right.
But
how about the elusive, used to be a boxcar, now it's a cabin that we can never find.
Oh, yeah. So
I work with a person whose in-laws have a place not far from the resort.
Okay, from Little Pine.
That's the way I hear it. It's, yeah. Oh, we're not. Yeah. Well, we went all the way down to where you meet up with the Crow Wing
River,
thinking that she meant that way.
Yeah.
And last time I talked to her, no, by that resort. I was like, oh, that's right across the river. She said, yeah, well, you'll know it because it's. So if you remember back in the day, somebody bringing in an old boxcar and starting to build around that as a cabin, I actually...
That should have been. There was a lot of railroad guys there.
Yeah.
So that could, I'm not aware of it, but yeah.
It's her husband's family, and it's a long time ago. They put the... And she said, it doesn't even look like a boxcar now. They've done so much to it, you wouldn't know it was ever a boxcar. But I'm like, well, maybe that's the problem, is it just looks like a regular building, and we zip by it a million times. And lost lures in their trees and the whole bit, but... It's hard to say.
Haven't found the boxcar yet.
Yeah, the elusive boxcar.
Well, Mike had a damned camper off a pickup truck. They lived in that for a winter.
Wow. I bet that was brisk.
Oh, yeah. Wow. They joke about it now, how they cannot get divorced.
There was a lot of rules that I think have changed.
Yeah.
Well, it had to. When they went with that 30-year lease... That's when you start seeing these $400,000 or $500,000 places.
Yes,
You know, because we got some down from us towards
Well, see, there'd be financing involved.
Sure.
And so the banks wouldn't look at that on a 1 year lease situation.
Right.
You know that could be in trouble.
Reason. Yeah, that was the whole reason. So they could, because boy, there's
so the bank would run the show.
Yeah. Mm. Big places. Well, like I said, that one across the river from us and down. Sold for $560,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's huge.
Wow.
It's a beautiful place, but
year-round.
If you got money, you know. When I got the lease, my dad thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
He said, "What are you going to build on lease property for? You can put all that money into it." And I said, "Not putting a lot into it, just enough to shelter us." And then after I did, and the kids got bigger, I thought, "Son of a." So-and-so, I should have built it bigger. There's not enough room.
Well, now you can get 30-year loans on mortgages and all sorts
of... Oh, yeah, well...
The bankers got involved.
I'm not going to be in it much longer. They're going to be in charge.
A lot of good memories up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't get up there
anymore.
You
guys used to duck hunt the gull, right? On a fairly...
That was the idea. Originally, it was duck hunting.
You know that boat he was talking about?
Yeah.
That I used to row that son of a gun.
With the name, the outplate out there?
Yes.
High pockets.
From there,
all
the way up under the bridges and up.
Yes, we go up
and I remember one time I went up there and, geez, the ducks were flying and I ran out of shells.
Wow.
A lousy shot. And I came back and that's when... Gramps was up there. And I said, geez, the ducks, why don't you come? So he, okay, I took him up there. And we stood on the far side, and there was guys over here. But he shot his gun a few times. And that was a long roll. And that old cedar boat.
The boys were talking that, you remember where the rice beds up past the bridge?
Yeah.
Went through the narrows, and you took a left and swung around, snaked it. And then there was a huge, before the next bridge, there was a huge rice paddy. That's all bulrushes now. I didn't see it. Doug told me. He said, you wouldn't believe it. There's a hill we used to go watch ducks come in.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, that below that hill.
Okay.
Doug said it's solid bulrushes. There's not a blade of rice in the whole
thing.
Oh,
there hasn't been any rice for years.
How does that happen?
All I figured was something about the farmers' fertilization
ran off the field
into the river, and it just took off.
Killed all the
Do you remember the time you and I were up that way? In the river, we parked, because there was people all over. We were duck hunting. Them tall reeds, and the game wardens came.
Joe was with us.
Yeah, he could have been.
Yeah.
Anyway, those two guys were in a boat, and it was opening. It was noon. Yeah.
He didn't give us the tickets.
No, not us, but there was two guys at 11:45 shot.
Oh.
And it wasn't long after that, here comes this green boat, and they went down, and they
That's ticketed the only them. Time I've seen ticketed a game warden.
Yeah, it's the only time. They ticketed those guys, and then they came and checked us.
Yeah.
And you had shot a duck. I remember that now. And it was laying out there. And the guy says, aren't you going to go get that? And he says, well, you said this. I wouldn't have balls. But he says, well, we were like to be hunting here until you came along and screwed everything. Or, you know, no, you said something like that, you know, chase them all away, you know. And I mean, you had the balls to say it. And I just, wow. So then we went out and got the duck.
Yeah.
What the hell are you going to do? I just remember that. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
It's not going to get any better. You better go get it.
Joe didn't have a permit, but he had his brother's jacket on. What do they call it when you're young and you're 12 or you're old or something?
Oh,
and you get a little
patch, like a gun safety patch.
Yeah, gun safety.
I think that. And he had Mike's jacket on with the gun safety thing, but he did not have a permit, which he was supposed to have. But the guy, he saw that and he didn't bug him.
Oh. I don't remember that. Wow. I just remember.
Close call.
Couldn't even remember shit.
Yeah.
I had really don't make a
Our elementary school, that was a big deal. If we all had our orange gun safety patch. Yeah. Mom sewed it on your jacket. Pretty big deal.
So no more rice, because you saw Indians harvesting the rice back in those days.
Yeah. Right out in front of the shack.
Yep.
From the shack, remember?
Yep.
I mean, there was rice right there. I mean,
yeah, and that's rice is gone.
Oh, great, yes. There's no rice. It used to be, like I've told you, back in those days, the river was perfect. It was rice and lily pads.
Well, and the rice attracted the game birds.
Oh, sure.
So rice and lily pads. Now it's they call it coontail.
Duckweed.
Duckweed.
Bulrushes.
There's still a lot of bass in there, though, that it's fun to catch. Yeah. So that road that used to run across by 210, that was long before. I mean, that wasn't that 1800s. You know, Mike, your son has that map. 210 used to go across.
Well, I don't think it was the highway.
Or it was just another road.
I think back to horse and buggies and crap.
Oh, okay.
I think that far back.
Horse and buggy days, okay.
Because that's really, really old. You still see the timbers down the ground there if you're careful. Real calm, we'll keep looking right close to the weeds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can come up, you'll see them down there.
You just get snagged on that.
I'm afraid I've hit them this year with my prop.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of them, I get close because...
Well, and the river's down a little bit, too. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because Doug was saying when he went up to Crow Wing...
he took out a prop.
Oh, yeah.
For, what, $600 or something?
I don't know. I know he didn't tell me the cost, but he said his prop was busted.
Dale and I drove up to Sylvan Dam, down to Sylvan Dam, below that. There was people fishing in the middle of the river. It's rockier than hell. And hardly any current, just rocks everywhere. And out of the power plant there was coming shoot like this maybe, but not hard. It was just amazing to see how little water.
Yeah.
Wow. And then we drove up to the Pillager Dam. We drove in the bottom side of that. And there are people in the middle of the river fly fishing. Right, well, they had waders on or hippers or something. And it was just strange to see that because that water there, I've seen it coming through our gangbusters. The whole dam spilling over.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, there's not much water coming.
I remember when we went up to that dam there by Pillager. Now, I don't know. It's the one dam on the river, the Gull River, before the Crow comes into it. And I had a picture of him holding the 2x12 or whatever and looking over.
Yeah.
Doing what?
Holding the 2x12, the boards.
You're in the boat right next to the the wood planks that were above, right on top.
Oh, yeah.
Keep clear.
Skip was... He panicked. He wouldn't go near that.
He was,
And I'd go over there and light a cigar. You son of a bitch. We bump right... Yeah. Okay, well, you look over, you know...
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Holy Christ.
That's right. We've got whole movies of that.
I used to enjoy pissing off that poor old man. We were good friends all our life.
You guys were something else. That was so much fun.
We went to town one time. You get there, you go to town, get your stuff. Booze and beer and groceries for the bran muffins. He had to have a whole sack of bran muffins. And then we split. You know, I get this and that, and you get this and this, and so on. And I remember the spark with J6J spark plate for that old Corsair. That was the number of it. And so that's my list of shit. He got his, so we went quick when he get back. We did. And we're back fishing. I knew damn well it was coming. So we got out fishing there, and he says, you know, I know something else, too. I said, what? You didn't get that J6J, did you? That spark plug. And I said, I told you I did. He says, I can tell in your face I know you. You're a lying son of a bitch. I says, Frank, is this the one you mean? I pull out my in the case yet. Is that the one you're bitching about, Frank? Oh, yeah. Straight through that. Put in the bait. A brand new one. Oh, Jesus Christ. That's why I remember the spark plug for that reason. But also I got his tackle box in the garage.
Whose tackle box do you have?
Skip's tackle box. Unless Doug took it. It's still here.
Yeah. Oh.
And in that tackle box is a J6.
Really?
That's the other reason I remember the number.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't remember my telephone number.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a good plug. I'm going in.
Wow. Was Skip older than you were?
No, I was a month older than him.
Okay. But he died back way in the 90s?
He died, too. He was 59 years old. He had a heart attack.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. And just to be clear, so you say when they didn't want tar paper, they didn't want the outside of the shack tar papered.
No, that I don't remember just the wording or exactly, but I definitely remember you could not have tar paper for a shack finish.
Yeah.
They just thought they didn't like the look or
shabbier.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, kind of. It is a curious look. Yeah.
You nobody had any money, you know, enough money, and they just took. Keep the moisture out. They put
tar paper shacks.
Some places I can't remember when I was just a kid.
Yeah. Put some lath over, and there you had siding.
Yeah.
Tar paper shacks.
I used to insulate houses with newspaper.
Yeah.
Crumpled it all.
Yeah.
That was the insulation.
Yeah. I had an uncle in Edina. Their house was built a long time ago, and they had horsehair insulation in the walls.
Horsepaper and
horsehair and more paper, yeah.
Wow, in the
horse
world.
Horsehair?
Horsehair, yeah.
I'll be damned.
I know. I thought, boy, there's a lot of dead, unlucky racehorses. Should have done better in the fifth.
Forty-six years, mostly good memories. It sounds like
I enjoyed it.
Hard work, though. I mean,
I liked a bad night, a stormy night. We had good power. I loved busting through the snowbanks and shit. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh yeah. Okay.
If you get a fast train, I enjoyed my job. And I've gone 100 miles an hour on a steam engine.
Wow.
And not many have done that.
Oh.
I've gone that in a diesel too, but that's easy.
Yeah. Okay. Now, diesel.
It's also illegal.
Yeah. I was going to say, holy cow.
Well, I figure we took up enough of your time, but thanks so much for sharing the story.
I don't know what we'll be talking about. All that bullshit went in there?
Yeah.
All it did. Yeah, it did. Wow. Maybe we can talk for...
Go a little bit longer, it'll start to smoke.
Yeah, right. The language used, I don't know.
Well, that was a lot of fun. It's two times now I've sat down with my Uncle Joe.
Yeah.
Both times with my dad.
Right.
And it's just great to hear those stories. I mean, a lot of the enthusiasm I've held on to for just going
to the places on the Gull River have come from listening to my dad and Uncle Joe and my grandpa.
Yeah, the decades of stories.
Yeah, and just the love that they had for it. And,
right.
And just the citing the different changes or mm-hmm. like how the ducks are flying this year as opposed right. to the other years and
right.
various stories and
replacement of the wild rice fields with bulrushes.
Right.
Just how things change over time, you know, differing uses and differing populations, and you know, change is inevitable. How you change, you know, how you decide to deal with it is optional, I guess. I only know the Gull River as bulrushes and cattails and fall colors, and I love it, you know. But they kind of pined nostalgically for there used to be rice stands all over the highway, you know,
as far as you could see. And
oh, wow. That
ducks flying.
Would have been cool. I still wish somehow I could time travel back into seeing that resort right across the river.
The Little Pine Resort.
Yeah, in its heyday, you know, with the polka band going and the old style light glowing and, you know, whatever it is, green. But I don't know what it is. You'd know better than I. I think it's old style, isn't it?
Old style.
Yeah, old style. You know, we're both historians and aficionados of the past. And
right.
You know, Pioneer Village.
I mean, that's
Paul Bunyan land.
Exactly.
Oh my God, that kind of stuff is just priceless.
One of my favorite takeaways was that I finally learned the great mystery that I've always had. Why does the train horn sound different than it did in the good old days? It's just sound different, and I just don't understand why.
Good to have you here, Mr. Stewart.
Well, kind of a weak imitation, but
I
that's
wasn't
all right.
Bad. I enjoyed it.
It's just general old guy.
Yeah, the
Fudd
codger.
Old
the codger.
Guy.
Fudd as
whatever.
Codger.
It doesn't have to be Jimmy.
For crying out loud.
But
got Tim Russell back on the show.
Exactly.
This would be very convincing. Anyway.
It made sense that it went from steam. The horns were, you know, that steam sound.
Different voice.
And then the air horns.
Yes.
And then now it's electronic.
Electronic.
Which is fine. You know, I still love to hear it.
Absolutely.
I still love to hear it. And at the very end of the podcast, if you actually listen to every last second, you usually hear...
You're that way. Stick around. Listen, you'll... Yes, you know, you might hear it.
You might hear that train horn echoing down the river.
Well.
But at any rate, our thanks again to my Uncle Joe and my dad.
So much fun.
And who else? Well, you know, I also wanted to reach out to a YouTuber. Well, his name is Jeff Berrier, I think. It's Berrier. And some of the train sound. We took recordings from all kinds of sources, but there's some great videos you can watch on the old steam locomotives, and it's just great to sit and watch them half an hour.
Yes.
So Jeff Berrier videos, lots of steam, you know, shoveling the coal into that firebox.
Right.
We found it right on YouTube, so
correct.
Exactly what my Uncle Joe was doing in those early days. Thanks for hanging out with us, and
absolutely.
I hope you enjoyed all the great train sounds. So now you know what all the hoopla is when Bjorn and I are like, oh, listen to the sound of those trains.
Oh, the crackle of the fire ring.
And there goes the train.
Let's go cast a few.
Over the bridge. 10 o'clock at night, Fudd.
You sentimental guys.
Bart's crying again. Shut up.
Well, with that, we'll say sayonara for now, but we'll see you next time.
Bon chance. Thanks for listening, and we'll start a new pot of coffee for you next week.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.